Welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. And for those of you who were with me earlier, welcome back. You know, we're starting this hour out by taking a look at what's happening in our world, particularly in America, and with a specific focus on climate change. And to narrow it even more with regards to our clouds. But not just the clouds of America. I say the focus on America. We're going to take a look at the Earth and the Earth's clouds and their significance.
Sorry to be the bearer of startling news, but the clouds are disappearing? Like we could be edging closer and closer to a world with no clouds, which could contribute a significant 8 degrees Celsius to the already predicted global temperature rise. We all know climate change is already radically transforming our world and will continue to do so. But an unexpected byproduct of high atmospheric carbon dioxide levels is a loss of clouds. I know it sounds insane, but it may have happened before. Around 56 million years ago, the geologic record indicates that the world was essentially ice-free. In other words, it was super hot, with an average annual temperature of around 30 degrees Celsius. A hot flash in the Earth's history we now refer to as the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum.
Just FYI, that 30 degrees Celsius would be roughly 86 degrees Fahrenheit.
In trying to figure out how the heck Earth could have gotten that toasty, today's scientists estimate that it could be due to a loss of cloud cover, particularly stratocumulus clouds. To help us unravel this theory, we spoke to journalist Natalie Wolchover, who spent over a year researching this topic.
The question of how stratocumulus clouds will change is kind of the most important question in knowing like how bad global warming is going to be going forward.
Stratocumulus clouds are the most common cloud type, and more of Earth's surface is covered by them than by any other kind of cloud. They keep Earth and its oceans cool by shading all of us underneath them and bouncing sunlight back into space away from us. A lot of them also produce a very nice drizzle. They're dependent on something called convective instability, and they form a distinctive, relatively thin layer because their growth upwards is limited by a zone of dry, stable air above them, even while they draw moisture from whatever's underneath them. Their structure is totally dependent on their ability to release and absorb heat and moisture in a very particular way, a way that cannot be disturbed. Now, we do have very high fidelity simulations and computer models that help us understand the possible effects of climate change. From sea ice melt to sea level rise to temperature changes, we can understand how fluctuating factors like levels of atmospheric CO2 may affect the Earth's natural systems. These kinds of models are run on supercomputers because they have so many intricate moving parts that the calculations would just be impossible on any other kind of computer. But cloud dynamics, like what's happening inside a stratocumulus cloud, actually take place on too small a scale to be included in these larger models. They're also just so complex that they're very difficult to predict. So they get left out of larger climate simulations that tell us a lot about what could happen to our world as it warms. A joint research team from Caltech and the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory have now tackled this gap in our climate models. They created a novel application of the same kinds of simulations we use for larger climate phenomena, a large eddy simulation. Applying this on a smaller scale allowed them to study cloud behavior in response to several factors, one of them being atmospheric CO2 concentration. And as it turns out, as the CO2 levels rise, the stratocumulus clouds can't achieve as much long-wave cooling, or the release of heat from the top of the cloud. This disturbs the convection that keeps the cloud together, and they just break apart.
They found that this breakup of stratocumulus clouds could actually add 8 degrees Celsius of additional warming to the Earth system in future. And a big question is, at what point would that tipping point occur? Based on some simple assumptions, this tipping point would occur when the CO2 in the atmosphere reaches 1,200 parts per million. And that level is three times the current level of CO2 in the atmosphere.
This work confirms that high historic CO2 levels may have caused the lack of cloud cover that led to a sweltering PETM back in the day. But it also presents the alarming prospect that rising atmospheric CO2 today not only raises global temperatures, but could lead to loss of cloud cover. And this results in even hotter global temperatures than we'd previously anticipated, just because our climate models didn't include cloud dynamics.
It's also important to remember that this tipping point is far enough away that we can avoid it. And that's been interesting to talk to these scientists and understand that they're more optimistic than you might expect. You have to be optimistic or you just wouldn't be able to stand dealing day in and day out with this prospect.
This research makes an essential contribution to our understanding of atmospheric science in an era of changing climate. But the simulation only looked at one particular area of the globe that's prone to cloud loss, and other scientists are saying we may not be able to extrapolate that behavior to the whole world, at least not without further work on the subject, so take any crazy headlines with a little grain of salt. It is a crucial example of why continuing to understand how all these complex unknowns work together is so important and needs to be supported. So we can keep preparing for our new reality, and hopefully, if we detect these issues early enough, take action that could keep them from happening in the first place. Now that I have your attention, Earth Day is coming up. Let us know in the comments what your favorite way to reduce CO2 is, and make sure you always come back to Seeker for all your climate science updates. Thanks for watching.
You know, I'm wondering how, you know, what your thoughts are about this. We know that part of the problem, a big part of the problem, the biggest part of the problem, I think, that we have when it comes to taking the steps, taking the action that's necessary for in trying to delay, even hold back some of these problems that would be due to climate change, is the fact that we have so many politicians, and particularly in America, because this is the problem for all the earth, as she was mentioning. But when it comes to taking steps, the necessary steps to head this off, in America in particular, some of our politicians are devoted, dedicated, committed to doing everything in their power to make sure that America does not take the steps that we need to take and doing what we can to reduce climate change. In fact, not only are they committed to doing all that they have in their power to prevent us from taking the steps necessary to reduce climate change, you look at the laws that they have been passing, particularly some of those laws that have been passed in the last 2 years, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, last few years, particularly since President Trump took office, with the reversing of laws that gave the Environmental Protection Agency not only some marching orders, but also funding necessary to do what they need to do to ensure that corporations and others are following the law so that climate change is reduced. Unfortunately, because of the commitment that so many of our politicians have to ensuring that we take the steps that guarantee that we move towards more climate change and the destruction that follows it. Our biggest challenge is how we, the people, view this whole problem and what we really want to do about it. It's interesting that some of we, the people, have taken this matter very, very seriously, and we want our politicians to do the right thing when it comes to reducing climate change. But we do have many from amongst we, the people, who applaud the steps that our Republican politicians are taking to ensure that climate change continues and unabated, and they support them. Our biggest challenge is whether or not, number one, our voting system will be fair enough, just enough, that we do have fair representation and accurate counts when it comes to who the constituents are voting for. And thereby, as a result of that, seeing whether or not we have enough of our political leaders who will say, hey, look, you know what? We've known for decades that the science is real. We've known for decades that the science is true. Some of our political leaders have been saying that. They know that, they all know that the science is true, but some of them deny the science. And they use that as an excuse to continue to fight against reducing our carbon footprint. So what do we do? I think that if we could get down to the business of letting our elected officials know, hey, listen, and particularly those who are conservative voters, conservative constituents, the conservatives from amongst we the people, who have decided that even though you like a lot of the things that conservative politicians stand for, you know that the science about climate change is right, is true, and you know that we all, including our political leaders, need to be doing everything in our power to abate climate change. You need to let them know, hey, look, I know I voted for you, but this climate thing is real. This climate change thing is real. It's very, very threatening. You need to make the cast your vote the right way about this situation. Now, that's not the only thing that any of our politicians need to be casting the right vote for. But since we're on this right now, this is what I'm focusing on right now. We all need to be letting our political leaders know that we're concerned about where we're going to be with regards to the air we breathe, the water we drink, the earth on which we live, what the temperature is going to be, and how will it be impacting people's health. We're concerned about all these floods that are getting worse and worse and worse, not only destroying houses and homes because of the sheer force of the water, but all of the disease that comes with that. And one thing about it, a lot of our politicians may be thinking, you know what? To an extent, we can control where the floodwaters go. And we can make sure that the peoples and the communities that we consider to be less desirable or undesirable are the ones who get hit the worst with the floods. Notice what I said. They would decide which groups get hit the worst. Because, number one, they know that some of the people who they'd rather be spared completely the traumas and the drama of floodwaters, they know that some of the people they consider to be the desirables, the desired, will also be affected by the floodwaters, the diseases, loss of home, loss of cars, loss of peace, loss of joy, sometimes loss of loved ones. But they've calculated and they've determined that that is just a casualty of war, and that's something that they're willing to put up with in order to have the undesirables hit harder. Remember Lee Atwater encouraging the Republicans decades ago, look, we know that by doing these things, white people are going to be hurt, but we also know black people are going to be hurt worse. Do you want to be among some of the white people who are hurt by these decisions? Sometimes, you know, we absolutely refuse to change our hearts, our minds, our attitudes, and begin to genuinely care for those people. But sometimes when we begin to realize that we too will be affected, we're willing to take a second look. We're willing to change our attitudes, our minds, our thought process about some of these matters. If you start there, start from a selfish standpoint, all right, start there. And then if you'd like to become an even stronger citizen who does even more to take care of this country, which is your home, then expand that passion to others, those people. Start looking out for them too. All right. Take a look at water. Speaking of climate change and water and the need that we all have for clean, safe, drinking water. Let's focus now on water. And with get some help from popular science. And here's the question I'm asking. I'm making a statement and I'm asking a question to follow that statement. Here's the statement. We will all always need water. Ladies and gentlemen, it will be a need. We will all always need water. But will our water always be safe for us? Well, if some of our elected officials have their way, the answer is yes. If others of our elected officials have their way, the answer is no. The Environmental Protection Agency, of course, as we also know, the EPA, has made moves to shrink national water protections for 2 years. Of course, this is because this is what Donald Trump, President Trump, and others in the political, in the Republican political leadership want them to do. Shrink national water protections. So basically, the executives, the leaders of the EPA are going to do what the president, what the current administration wants them to do. Under President Obama, the EPA was doing more to provide water protections because President Obama was very concerned about the safety of our drinking water, especially in light of the fact that, as many of us know, and many of the experts are telling us, more and more of the water that we have that we need is becoming unsafe for human consumption, for human use. We have President Donald Trump in the White House now. He's committed to doing everything in his power to allow for, in fact, to provide for the polluting of our waters. And so he has mandated that the EPA shrink national water protections. And so for 2 years, the 2 years he's been in office, that's what's been happening. In July 2017, the EPA and Army Corps formally proposed rescinding the Clean Water Rule. In February 2018, the agencies suspended the Clean Water Rule until February 2020. The Trump administration is proposing revisions to the Clean Water Act, which was introduced in 1972 as a way to curb widespread pollution in United States waterways. I want to ask you, what do you think about that? Politicians who say, "I love America," and they make it their business to put into place policies that they know will lead to more widespread pollution in our waterways. The Clean Water Act, introduced in 1972 as a way to curb the widespread pollution in our waterways. The replacement, or at least that which is being proposed, is rife with rollbacks that would affect every American. Lawmakers, scientists, and the general public had up until April 15 to submit comments on the proposed changes. Can you imagine our leaders, some of our leaders, working diligently, almost feverishly, to ensure that our waters are polluted again? Back in a few.